Janine Hamner-Holman, welcome to you. Janine is the founder of J&J Consulting Group. She brings over 30 years of experience using scientifically validated strategies and tools to build high-performance teams and develop leaders everyone wants to work with. Wow. Want to hear more about that? Janine is also a keynote speaker and author. She says, quote, I love this, I'm on a mission to help people have thriving careers. Janine, thank you so much for taking part in this conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis. Hi, Janine.
Thank you so much for having me, Andy.
It's my absolute pleasure. Now, we had a chance to talk a little bit last week in preparation for this conversation. And there's so many things. My list of questions is this long, and I won't get to all of them, but I want to get through a lot of them because you have so much good information for all of us who have been victims of bullying in the workplace. And you, unfortunately, are one of those in that group as well. Can you tell me a little bit, before we get into the great work you're doing, can you tell me a little bit about your experience as a victim of workplace aggression?
Sure. And I really appreciated recently you had posted something that was talking on LinkedIn, talking about how bullies don't target the weakest. They target the strongest.
Yes.
And that was super helpful to me because, like many of us, I have been in a perpetual, why me? Why did she pick on me in the way that she did? And so this was a number of years ago. And obviously, as you can tell by the pronoun I'm using, she was a woman.
Yes.
And her strategy was that she would lift up one person in the team, and between the people that she directly supervised and then the people that they supervised, she had a team of about 30 people. And so she would lift up usually one of the senior people on the team and just talk about how amazing they were. And she really liked superlatives and would just talk in all of this glowing language about you, and she would do it publicly to other people on the team. And like, if you have any problem, just talk to Janine. She's so brilliant.
Yeah.
And of course, that was lovely. But the problem was, I knew that the fall was coming. And it wasn't you would just like fall out of favor and somebody else would be in favor. With me in particular, I would fall from, you know, this pinnacle underneath the outhouse. And he would then tear me down, both about specific things like, oh my God, you guys, can you believe that Janine did this? But also about who I was. Like, can you believe that Janine is so stupid? And public shaming. And she would in front of my colleagues. She would do this in front of people who are accountable to me. She would do this in front of clients. And so it was incredibly demoralizing. And like has happened to so many of us, I was that frog in the pot of boiling water where the temperature was just being turned up slowly. And I did not realize as I was in it, I didn't realize the toll that this was taking on me and my sense of self-confidence and my sense of self and my sense of self-efficacy as a human being. And it wasn't until I went to a doctor actually asking to be put on antidepressants. And what he said to me was, you are in a state of massive crisis and I'm sending you out on immediate medical leave. And I was out on medical leave for 6 months. And then honestly, it took me another year and a half to really put myself back together again.
Unbelievable. So many things. I just have to ask you a couple things about this. First of all, I remember something you said. And I just want to bring it back to when you were at the doctor's office and you said something to the doctor that was astounding. Your doctor found it astounding. Do you know what I'm referring to?
I do. So the doctor said this to me, you're in massive crisis and I'm sending you out on medical leave. And my response was, can I think about it? And he said to me, if I told you that you had cancer, would your response be, can I think about it?
Right.
And I said, you know, no, but I need to think about it. And I feel like that part of the story, and thank you for bringing that back,
yeah,
is also endemic of what happens to us in these situations. And it's part of also the demystifying of things around mental health and the normalizing of the fact that, you know, probably everybody on the planet at one time or another goes through some sort of a mental health crisis. And when we're in the midst of it, it's hard to realize what's happening, such that when a doctor says this, you know, very provocative thing to me, my response is, you know, I need to think about this. I wouldn't think about it if a knee surgeon told me, you know, all of your cartilage are degraded and we need to do a knee replacement. I don't need to think about that.
But not only think about it, I think for me, the striking thing about that story, and I'm so sorry you went through it, the striking thing isn't so much that you had to think about it. What you were thinking about was going back to work. So what you wouldn't say to an orthopedic surgeon who told you that your cartilage was torn, you wouldn't say, well, let me think about it because I may still play football next week.
Because I'm running a marathon.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's why, and thank you for the comment, because when I was doing my own work, beginning to understand, I was in television for many, many years and still involved in television, but not daily production. And I had so many instances of workplace aggression throughout my career, which when I had a moment to think about it during COVID, I realized what I had gone through, but I didn't even know there was a name for it. But I had so much shame because I thought that I asked for it, that I deserved it. There was something about me. And that's something that's so important that you brought up, and you come off so smart, so capable, so strong, so self-confident. And that's also been a relief to me knowing that there's other people. Look, we're not talking about employees that show up drunk and late and don't do assignments. We're talking about the most devoted, loyal, hardworking, and productive employees, which of course you were one. And that's, those are the people that, whatever the reason, you know, we're not in the psychiatrist's office as to why people bully us. Maybe we're a threat. I don't know. But that sounds like the exact experience that you went through. And so as a segue, did this horrific experience that you went through, and I've also learned a lot about female bosses bullying other female employees, which happens not as much as male to others. Males are predominantly the aggressors, but it does happen. I've had women bullies, bosses that bullied me. I've also had great women bosses.
Right.
Did that?
Me too.
Was that the impetus for you doing this work? Because I want to get into, and I found so many people who went into this work because of the effect it had on them, which is why I'm here too, because I want to lend my voice to this important issue.
Yes. And I was thinking the other day, when we go through adversity in our lives, for many of us, what happens through that process is that some positive change comes out on the other end. We learn something that we wouldn't have learned otherwise. We get put on a trajectory that we enjoy and appreciate that we wouldn't have gone on otherwise. And so while I wouldn't say, you know, thanks so much for bullying me,
yeah,
It really, you know, the cost and the payoff, not simpatico. And
yes,
it completely shaped the work that I do today. And after you and I talk, I'm having a conversation with an organization, and I'm working actually with two organizations right now that are having this exact kind of problem internally. And so I do, as you mentioned in my intro, I do a combination of things. I am called an organizational development consultant, which really means anything that touches the employee's efficacy at work and excitement about work. Okay. And conversely, non-efficacy at work,
yeah,
and lack of engagement in the workplace. That's what I work on. And it's also then what I do keynote talks on. And because I realized, all right, if I'm on this mission that you mentioned earlier, you know, that's a big honking audacious mission.
Yes.
So A, I'm not getting there on my own. And B, which is why I'm always looking for people like you to partner with in these kind of endeavors.
Yeah.
And I need to take advantage of all of the things. And so, as you mentioned, I wrote a book and I do keynote speaking and I work intensely with organizations to help create organizational culture change, really.
Okay. So I'm interested in, I'm not asking who the companies you're working with and for, mm-hmm, but what's an example, kind of an anecdotal example of an organization or a boss or an HR person that calls you? What are you hearing that's going on? If you can, if there's a real world example without giving the company, that'd be great. But generally, yeah, when they call you, what are they saying to you and what do they need you to do and come in to try to accomplish?
It's usually one of two different kinds of things. So it's always, there's some people in a position of power and there's some people in less of a position of power. And those in the position of power are misusing their power.
Yep.
And so how can we change that dynamic? So I'm, as I mentioned, I'm working with two organizations right now that it's actually a challenge on their board of directors. And the way that it's playing out is that there are some folks on their boards of directors who have been around for a long time. And, you know, well, this is the way that things are done here.
Yeah.
And y'all little newcomer whippersnappers, y'all just shut up because we're running the ship over here. And what they are forgetting is, you know, and this happens in many kinds of organizations. I'm working with a law firm right now that is dealing with this issue with partners and associates. And the partners are annoyed that the associates aren't doing everything that they want them to do. And the question was asked by the managing director, well, are you being clear with those associates about what you want them to do? And the partner said, well, I shouldn't have to tell them that, right? So we have, and you know, there is a phrase, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And
yeah,
so we humans, we have a tendency when we get into positions of power to then be naughty. And
yeah,
so what I do is get to have an opportunity, and thank you for mentioning, I come across as confident and strong. And I also have this side of me, maybe it's, you know, a mothering instinct or it's something that's softer that allows me to say things to people,
yeah,
that they do not want to hear,
uh-huh,
but that they will listen to from me.
Okay, let me ask. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so that's what's created sort of this niche where I get to play, where we have a group of people in power misusing their power, and then a group of people not in power who want to be able to contribute and who want to be able to stick around. And
yeah,
because of the naughtiness happening on those with power, they're making it really hard for the more junior people to stick around. And so then it's usually the, you know, the CEO or the chair of the board or somebody in a position of authority and leadership who's seeing these dynamics play out and is realizing we're having a problem recruiting and retaining either staff or board, and we need an intervention here, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, in my experience, it usually was the CEO. In some cases, I worked at large media companies, at other ones, smaller ones, who, or so it was either the CEO or the number two, essentially. And so you couldn't find anybody brave enough. Sometimes there wasn't HR, but you wouldn't go to HR. Right. They're not brave enough to go. So it sounds like somebody's stepping up and reaching out to you. I also had somebody say to me once, I've counseled thousands of bully victims, but I've never had a bully boss come to me asking for help. But it sounds like the people that you're dealing with somehow, are they unaware of how they're treating others, or they don't care because they got power? And how are you addressing them to acknowledge that they need to change their behavior for the betterment of everyone?
Right. I mean, I think it's D, all of the above of the abusers. You know, they are not self-aware. And even if they were, they don't care. And so the opportunity is either then to reform those that are reformable and usher out the door those that are not. There was a brilliant article that came out a few weeks ago in the Harvard Business Review that talked about types of organizational dysfunction. And one of the first one that they highlighted was sharks in the water. And that's really what these bullies, who either are unself-aware or don't care, are. They're sharks in the water. And when, you know, I was a lifeguard way back in the day. When there's a shark in the water, you don't go out and try and rehabilitate the shark. You get everybody out of the environment of the shark, in the case of an actual shark. In this case, get the shark out the door. You don't keep the shark around and, you know, try to get them to be anything other than a shark.
But you have to have an awareness, a company that is aware, because, again, in my experience, it was the CEO or the number two who was looked on by the CEO as either a best buddy.
Right.
He looked good next to me, so I liked having him there.
Or, you know, good yes man.
Right. Or a good golf buddy, whatever.
That's
it was. And nobody was going to take that person on. And it sounds like, you know, you're able to make progress in that regard where they were. And I want to get into what happens to companies when you have these kinds of toxic cultures and toxic bosses and managers, because I know you look at it, and I'm sure that you make them aware of the deleterious effect of even one person. I saw where one person, in my view, pretty much took down a whole small company.
That's right.
And so tell me about the negatives that you see and how you communicate to organizations that no matter how good you might think, or maybe the person is a rainmaker, but the literal and figurative cost is so much greater.
Yeah. And that is true. It is both the literal and the figurative cost. And so what happens when an organization has people in power misusing their power is that it has a deleterious effect on everybody around them. It has a negative impact on their colleagues. Because one of the interesting things that happens in our brain, and about 20 years ago, I fell down a neurobiology hole and became an armchair neurobiologist. And so one of the things that happens in our brain when we see somebody else being bullied. So I see you being bullied. I'm not being bullied. You're not my best friend. I may not really even know you. But I see you being bullied. In that instance, my brain, and this is not the thinking part of our brain, these are more, you know, fight, flight, freeze kinds of parts of our brain, that part of my brain cannot disassociate between you and me. And so the impact of you being bullied is that I experience being bullied too. And as you and I talked about the other day, many, many people now have seen the Harvard Business Review study that says that 99% of us have either been bullied or witnessed bullying in the workplace. And so Christine Porath, who is out of, I think it's Penn, she is one of the preeminent scholars in this arena. And she did a study that shows I see you being bullied and I immediately start caring less about my job. I start doing a less good job. I start calling it in, phoning it in, quiet quitting, all of those things more. The impact is more than 25% less effort than it was previous to just me seeing you being bullied. Yeah. If I'm the bully, it's even more. And so when we think about the suppression, and I'm just one person who saw you be bullied. In my case, it was a whole team of 30 people who were witnessing me being bullied. So now each one of them is down a minimum of 25%. I'm down probably 50%. And because of this one woman's bullying, and it happened constantly. So you now have a team of 30 people who are collectively working maybe 65% yeah. of their capacity.
Yeah.
You take that bully out of the workplace, and now we are able to thrive. We are yeah. able to reengage, but there has to be real work done to help us reengage. And
yeah.
that just that action of the organization taking the shark out of the water, taking the bully out of the workplace will help re-engage me. Oh my gosh, they care about me and my yes. well-being so much that they removed this bully.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's ding-dong, the witch is dead. Everybody can breathe. Everybody. And my experience was in one particular instance, I had a boss who I loved. They fired him. There was a bully that I knew about and who was always denigrating everybody else and making a joke about it, you know, because I was on the in crowd for a little while and he was making fun of this one. He's overweight and he's a loser and this one's that. And I just knew it was a matter of time before I was part of that group that he was going to be, you know, going after. It happened. That's the other part of it. I think people see it happen and they might be pleased that it's not happening at the moment, but they know that it's a bad place and a toxic work environment.
It's so, coming.
Yeah, it's going to happen. And it's just a matter of time. So let me ask this, because it seems that I really don't like to generalize about huge groups of people. And I think every older generation kind of has things to say about the younger. As ambitious, lazy. I don't want to get into that. Because I have a couple kids who may be getting into that age pretty soon. So, but do you think younger people, like I think we talked earlier about the kind of characteristics of a bully target, were hard work and devoted. And I knew they could smell me, that I would just go back to work and try harder, even though I was already the hardest worker, that I would never take them on and you know, and I think that might have been a good strategy, but I loved the work and I needed the paycheck. So I That's never right. felt bold enough to take the bully on. And I don't suggest to people to take the bully on. I don't think that's a great strategy. Having said that, with the newer generations, people in their 20s coming into the workforce, mid-20s, even late 20s, what's your experience in terms of their, how shall I put this, their level of acceptance of this kind of mismanagement and ill-mannered behavior towards them? Are they like us? They're just going to go sit down and try harder? Or are they more like what the stereotype is, that they care more about work-life balance?
Yes. So they are not, at, you know, obviously, as a group. And as you said, many exceptions within any group of humans. And as a group, the millennial generation and the Gen Zs who are now coming up behind them in the workforce, they have essentially a zero tolerance policy around toxic leadership. And when you think about it, it kind of makes sense. So these young folk were raised by people in my generation. And even though this wasn't my strategy, many people of my generation, their parenting style was, oh my gosh, you're so brilliant. You're so fantastic. You can do yeah. anything yeah. that you want. And yeah. so as a result, not surprising, the millennial generation have a reputation of being entitled. Well, we created that by telling them you can do anything that you want. So they graduate from high school and they're ready to take over your Fortune 500 company. Yeah. And like, you know, there's a front of the hand and the back of the hand for everything. So the other side of that is that they do have an enormous amount of self-confidence. And what that creates is that when they get bullied or when they see other people getting bullied, their attitude is, I am out of here. I do not accept this. And as a group, they are much later to get married. They are much more, many of them have no plans to ever marry. They may, you know, have a partner for the rest of their life, but they're not that interested in getting married. Many of them are not planning on having kids. You know, I mean, it's a very different generation and different focus. And it's not just that they're young. The oldest of the millennials are now 44 years old, right? Yeah. So these are no longer kids. And they have a lot of experience in couch surfing, in putting together, you know, I'm going to side hustle it. I'm putting together three or four side hustles, moving back in with mom and dad. You know, they have all kinds of strategies in order then to make this plan of a zero tolerance policy work. And what that means is that the average tenure for both of these generations, the Gen Zs and the millennials, is still 18 months to 3 years in the workplace. And the reason that that's a problem is I'm working with an organization right now. They have literally 50% of their staff are retirement eligible. So these folks could be walking out the door at any moment. Yep. And they are still having a hard time recruiting and retaining younger members of the workforce. And if organizations don't crack the code, there's no place for the wisdom keepers who are wanting to retire to pass on that institutional knowledge. And we're going to have organizations failing if we don't figure this out.
In the couple minutes we have remaining, I want to ask you about that very subject. So the reason I'm so interested in the subject matter is because, and we could argue whether civil rights legislation has been effective for ageism and racism and LGBTQI victims of harassment. But there are civil rights laws on the books. There's nothing. You talked about zero tolerance. There's 100% tolerance in most companies of bullying.
That's right.
Okay. Yep. So with that in mind, in the couple of minutes we have, and I know you could go a great hour on this, but I'll ask you in a couple of minutes, which is, how do you codify something when you go into an organization? What do you tell them without giving away all your secret sauce to help them change the culture in a way that people know and have a path to follow to change their behavior and to change the culture?
So the biggest single thing, you know, there's many little things an organization can do in changing their culture around bully tolerance. The biggest thing that they can do, which is a big thing, is to tie bonuses and performance evaluations into this kind of thing. In order to do that well, they have to have truly where I am giving you information, but you can't tell who I am.
Like confidential kind of communication.
Yeah. So that they can do a 360 evaluation and that there's no way that the person who's being evaluated could even guess who it was that said those things. You know, at the organization that I was at, we would occasionally do that kind of thing, but you knew it was such a small pool of people who were being evaluated that she could very easily know, oh, well, I know who it is who's saying those bad things about me. And let me tell you about them, right? So you've got to set it up in such a way, anonymous. That's the word I was looking for. That there's
anonymous.
That there's real anonymity so that people can truly tell the truth about what their work experience is. And then you make that tied to compensation and to bonuses so that there is a financial incentive. And then you also tie it to PIPs, performance improvement plans, right? So that if I get a really negative evaluation, I am now on a PIP and either I shape up or I ship out.
Yeah.
And you've got to have organizations be willing and understand that, yes, there will be a cost if a rainmaker leaves, and the benefits of all the other people now being able to perform at a higher level are going to way outweigh the cost of losing that person.
That's great thoughts. Amazing thoughts. And I'll add one that I've been thinking about, which is when an organization hires a manager, anybody who's going to manage people, I believe there should be kind of part of the employment agreement where they agree to act in a particular way. And they sign it.
Like just a code of conduct.
Exactly right. Like bylaws for a code of conduct that obviously, you have to have training in sexual harassment. That you sign a non-bullying agreement as part of the bylaws of the company. So I'm in lieu of.
I love that idea.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm advocating because then they're on notice. They realize at the get-go that the company cares about such things. And nobody has these. But with the kind of work you're doing, Janine, and the kind of work that I'm just joining, I'm hoping we can get more of that into the workforce. Listen, I want to tell you, I could talk to you for another hour, 5 hours on stuff. It's fascinating. Your leadership and your knowledge on these issues is extraordinary. And it's been a great conversation. I learn every time and you inspire me. And I just want to thank you because it's been great for me. And I know everybody listening. So speaking of that, for those listening and watching, I understand you have something which I was joking with you beforehand that I would have found very helpful because I had never realized I was really being bullied. I just thought I'm in television. This is what comes with it. So you have something to offer the people watching and listening.
I do. So Dr. Amy Edmondson out of the Harvard Business School created a concept called psychological safety. And really, it has to do with what we're talking about here. How safe is it in your organization? How safe is it for you to speak up? And so I developed a survey that has a really robust report at the end of it that will show you both where your organization stands and some tips about how you might be able to change things going forward. And so that will be in the notes at the end. There will be either a link or a QR code that people can access that, and it's completely free.
Oh, that's great. And it'll also just address the thing, you're not alone. If you think that it's just you being bullied, you'll see from these questions and obviously from the information you provided today that there's many of us out there and there is help to be had. So thank you. Final word from me. We call ourselves bully targets, but now let's aim to change the workplace for good. Thanks for watching.
Andy, thank you so much for what you are doing. It's a great gift.
Thank you, Janine. Thank you so much.